This call is being recorded.
Join the call today. So just one minute and then we'll get started. All right, I think we can go ahead and get started. Just as a reminder, everybody is off of mute, so be sure to mute your phone if you don't want to be heard. But we just want to give everybody a chance to talk today, especially, you know, to talk about Prop 65. We've covered that on several different webinars and calls recently, but we just want to touch base on that briefly too today. So I'm going to have some discussion on that and also our Global Product Safety Guide, or RSL, and that's really the purpose of the call today. As we, during our last product safety call in July, we mentioned that we were gonna ask everybody to take a look at our current product safety guide and get feedback on it. So after this call, I'm gonna go ahead and tell you where everything, all the documents are for the call. If you want to look on your computer now, and we'll send that out after the call. But basically, we've got a brand new looking site for this working group, and it's fdra.org/productsafetywg/. So one more time, that's fdra.org/productsafetywg/. And you can find all these documents that I'm gonna reference here. You can also, after the call, I'll send this out so that everybody can have it and at the documents here. But basically, we wanna keep everything for this group in one easy place, so that if you want to access our Prop 65 documents or the RSL, you can go here and click on it. We'll go ahead and start with Prop 65 because the new safe harbor warning label requirements took effect on August 30th. So that's something everybody needs to be aware of, that there's significant changes. And had both a really good document, Joel Reeves, who we partner with on this issue. Melissa Jones comes to several events that we do each year. I believe she'll be at FTDC, which is our next event, where we're going to really take a big deep dive into changes to Prop 65. So encourage everybody to try to attend that. But I put both of these documents, or the document and the webinar, on this page. And, you know, the document that Stoll Reeves did is just really kind of some quick takeaways that if you are going to label, if you're going to use the new safe harbor warning label requirements, here's what you need to do. So that's the second document. And then the third is a link to the webinar, where it's about a 30-minute webinar, and she takes a deep dive into answering some questions and explaining exactly what the changes mean. They're much more specific. You know, safe harbor, in the past it was this can cause cancer, you know, this may cause cancer, reproductive harm. Now it's, you have to state a specific chemical, and there's very specific language to have that safe harbor protection. So both of those documents under Prop 65 resources go through that. And the other thing we put there is something we were looking at, just a breakdown of what we're seeing in 2018 so far on Prop 65 action on footwear. So it takes the notices and looks at them by the date they were filed, who the plaintiff was. No surprise, it's almost always the same plaintiff, consumer advocacy group, Inc. The alleged violators, what type of footwear was targeted, and then the chemicals. What's interesting, if you're looking at the numbers so far, there are about 1,700 notices in 2018, 61 involving footwear, and really targeting a handful of chemicals, so phthalates, DBP, 41 of those notices involved DBP, 31 involved DHP, 3 involved DINP, so that was the bulk of them, were these phthalates, and then there was one notice for lead, but you can take a look at that on the site as well. And so that's just for 2018. We're going to go back and look at 2017 as well, just kind of get a good idea of what, you know, what type of action we're seeing on Prop 65. And again, we're going to have a lot of discussion on this at FTDC this year. We're going to, next week we have an event in North Carolina, and we're going to touch on it briefly there. But, you know, FTDC is really a good time to ask questions on, you know, to make sure you're doing everything right if you are labeling. So just wanted to start by sharing those resources with you. And we're happy now to have some questions or discussion, you know, how companies are dealing with these changes, which just took effect on August 30th. On these new safe harbor warning labels for those that choose to label. So again, everybody's off mute. If anybody wants to chime in and express some Prop 65 concerns or comments, issues that you're having, suggest things that would be helpful from us on this issue for you, you know, please you know, feel free to share that.
This is Peter from Rec Room Shoots.
Hey, Peter.
Hey. Just a quick question, and I addressed this with a few in this group already. We have made our decision pretty much. We are still very about it for the warning message. Is there any good chemical in the whole list that would be preferred to use? I mean, let's say it like this, probably the least harmful out of all the bad to be listed in such a warning message. Did anybody go through that?
That's a really good question that Peter raised, since now you have to list the chemical if you're using these safe harbor warnings. And I know Melissa said on before, on the past webinar, she talks about that issue, which again, you can access the webinar on this new page. And she says there has to be a reasonable basis for listing a chemical. But, you know, that does create a big issue. If, you know, if you have multiple chemicals, you have to list one. Which chemical do you use? I don't know if other companies have had comments on that. It's something we can take to Melissa and see if she can maybe provide us a little bit, if she has any thoughts on that. But that's certainly an issue that's coming up with new safe harbor warnings.
Yeah, I would think that with the safe harbor warnings, for those who have decided to label, even if it's whether it's point of sale in California or e-commerce point of sale, when someone goes to your website and pull and decides to buy something and then indicates that they're located in California and it comes up, it would seem to me that the usual suspects of lead and phthalates, whatever this or whatever the specific phthalate is, would be the one for which companies would use. I feel like that's what those who are labeling have told us, but are there folks on the call who are deciding to label, who have decided to choose a certain chemical over another one that they'd like to share?
Sensitive topic.
Very much so.
Yeah.
Well, that's a great point, Peter, and I appreciate you raising it. And you know, as we know, last time it was so the language was very different, and you didn't have this issue where you're having to decide, you know, there's 900 chemicals on the list, which one of the ones that might be in footwear, which one do you list, and how is that going to be perceived by the consumer that may be familiar with this in California, but elsewhere when they pick it up, you know, what does that mean? There is a short form warning, and that's something that that's on our document too. It's basically, there's all sorts of rules for using that. I know some companies are choosing to do that rather than, you know, confusing consumers with a certain chemical. You get the choice of saying, you know, warning cancer, and then link back to the Prop 65 website, or warning reproductive harm. So that's another option, but again, that's a whole other issue of you know, what type of concern that creates for consumers that may not understand exactly what that means. Mm-hmm. So any other questions on Prop 65 or any other comments?
This is Pravin with Steve Madden. I got one quick question. Has anybody been hearing about cadmium at all?
That's a question for the group. If anybody else wants to chime in, has anybody been hearing anything on cadmium? And that's from and that's on Prop 65. You're hearing.
Well, cadmium is on the Prop 65 list. I just I'm not sure if there has been any talks on testing for cadmium, or to make sure the cadmium is not in any other product.
I think what the labs will tell you is that it's a part of the heavy metal screening, which is one test that covers all the different ones, and cadmium is on our, we'll talk about this in a little bit, but on our RSL, cadmium is on tier one. So we recommend that as part of the heavy metal screening that people scan for it. And as we saw, this was many years ago, but companies were moving towards using cadmium as a substitute for lead, and that was just as problematic. And I think there was even a McDonald's Happy Meal glass recall, if I'm not mistaken, because of cadmium being present in the product due to Prop 65. So I think it's always out there on people's minds, and I think people just kind of rope it into the broader heavy metal screening that companies employ. I don't know if others have thoughts on it, but it's always been on our kind of tier one list as something for folks to be focused on.
Has anybody seen any kind of legal actions because, you know, pushing on the cadmium?
We have the list. I'm trying to think if there have been Prop 65 notices on cadmium. I don't believe there has been.
Not this year, and we started the adding 2017 list. We haven't. There weren't any last year that we've seen so far. As we go back and look, I don't know if that's something that's going to be targeted going forward. But on at least Prop 65, we haven't seen that. I did notice on. I mean, looking at the. We'll talk about it in a second. But the state product safety laws, Washington. You know, there was a number of reporting on cadmium. Through that law, you have to report to the state, and you do see a lot of that, there.
Okay, thank you.
Sure. Anyone else? All right. So I just want to turn quickly to kind of what's going on in the state chemical safety law realm. Really, there's three states that we watch pretty closely. That's Washington State, Oregon, and Vermont. They all have reporting regimes that are similar. Basically, they involve children's products. And so with these states, if you have a chemical that is of high concern to children, they have a list of you are supposed to report to the state if it's intentionally added above a certain limit, the practical quantitation limit, which is outlined in these laws, or above 100 parts per million if it's a contaminant. So if that's the case, you're supposed to report to the states. They're all a little different in how often you report, when the report's due, what the fees are. Washington, there are no fees for reporting, and what you include in the report. We've got a breakdown of that on this new site too, where you can look at our presentation that we gave in Boston that breaks out the differences and similarities between these three reporting laws. Different than Prop 65, because with Prop 65 you're notifying consumers. Here you're reporting state on a chemical that may be in your product. One of the big recent differences on this is, until 2017, all three states were pretty close on the chemicals, their chemical list. They had about 66 chemicals each. They tracked almost identically. But then in 2017, Washington State added 20 chemicals and took three chemicals off of their list. So now you really do have a patchwork where Oregon and Vermont have these three chemicals that are on their list. And then Washington has 85 chemicals now. And so that's That's the patchwork for those three states. You can actually track, the Washington state has a good database where you can go in and you can see what footwear companies are reporting. And so I've linked that on there too, on the site. It's underneath state chemical safety laws, Washington state reporting, what footwear companies are reporting. So basically with that, you just click on that, you enter in the product segment. So you'll enter in footwear, and then you can choose the product family is going to be footwear. And then it's going to ask you for the product class, and they've got different types, athletic footwear, footwear accessories, indoor footwear, et cetera, and then the brick code. And then you can choose the dates. You can do a search and see what other brands are doing in this area, what other types of products are being, or what other types of chemicals are being reported in children's products in Washington. Again, there's no fee on this one. But there is, you can see there are a lot of companies that are reporting to Washington on what's in children's products. So we just wanted to make sure everyone was aware of that as well, as we talk about kind of what's going on at the state level. And so there hasn't been any recent development since the last call on state action, but just wanted to kind of give a quick snapshot of that. And then the last thing we wanted to talk about on the call, and actually the most important, is we're just taking a look at our current product safety guide for footwear, which we partnered with Tufsut on that, and we've talked with them about this, and we've got some edits to it, mainly on we're changing dates and changing some of the language on it. But that's under it's our product safety guidebook. There's a link under that, FDRA and Tufsut Global Product Safety Guidebook. And that's also under our product safety. It's all over our website. If you go to our product safety link on the main page of our website, you can find it. You can find it on this site. But basically, we've got chemicals in tiers. So tier one is chemicals that are currently covered by state and federal laws in the U.S. and should be tested as part of a reasonable testing program. Tier two are substances partially regulated outside of the U.S., including the EU. They may be present in some footwear substances. They're all going to be covered by Prop 65, but these aren't ones that have been the subject of increased regulatory scrutiny. And then tier three are partially regulated outside the U.S., and they could be a focus of U.S. regulations in the long term. So what we'd ask you to do is just take a look at this document, and specifically the chemicals, and share with your teams. And we're just mainly trying to be sure that it's fully current, up to date, and also, doing kind of our due diligence to make sure, is there any chemical that's on list two that should be in list one or list three? Any chemical in tier two that should be in tier one or tier three that should be in tier two? We've reviewed it, and we just wanted to ask you to do the same. Again, you can access that on this page, and I'll send that out as soon as the call's over. We did, one member has raised flame retardants, an example of something we should at least take a close look at, because that seems to be the hot topic this year on state chemical safety regulations in the U.S., or state chemical safety laws is efforts to have greater regulations on flame retardants. So we'll take a close look at that. But we want to see if there are any other chemicals as people look at this that we need to consider.
This is where folks like, not to put you on the spot, but Peter, Rack Room, and others come in, because when we were developing this 8 or 9 years ago, Peter, I remember you being kind of a voice of pragmatism to ensure that we created a standard that was attainable, that was broad-based, and that kind of made sense regarding what was going on regulatory wise on the ground at that time and moving forward. And things have just gotten more patchworky, if that's a word, and more complex. Mm-hmm. That's why we created the tier system, because we wanted people to be able to organize in their minds the way in which they should approach this, knowing that you can't test for everything. And so I would implore Peter and everyone else on the call to look at the current edition, which I think is the fourth iteration of it, and just provide feedback as you see fit so that we can make an educated decision on what we move up or down. And I can't imagine things go down, but what we might move up. But I just
that's kind of just my word of encouragement to everyone on the call to do that for us.
Thanks for bringing it up. I would have said again something.
Thanks, Peter.
I'm just trying to cut you off at the pass, my friend.
Great. Anybody else have any comments on the product safety guide now? I know a lot of people want to take a look at it again, but anybody have any thoughts or comments on anything we discussed or any other product safety issues that are coming up that you want us to be aware of, you want other companies to be aware of?
The only other thing I'll say is as people rack their brains as if they want to speak up, is that we have a lot of great talent, even just looking at the folks on this call. Some of you might be new to the scene and navigating product safety for the first time, and it seems complex, and there are these phthalate names there's no way that you'll ever be able to pronounce. And some of you have been doing this a long time and have backgrounds. I think of Steve Cross at Wolverine and some others that – Eric at Nike and others have this background in chemical safety and chemical composition and ways in which chemicals kind of permeate the supply chain. And so I really implore those of you who have a good background in this and a strong foundation to help us kind of hone this list into the best list we can, while at the same time making it attainable and accessible to companies that are trying to figure this out. There's a brand, a brand that's doing very well right now that is a member of ours that is really trying to institutionalize and make more corporate some of their programs. And as years go by, I still continue to work with companies. We work with companies that are not nearly as sophisticated as you might think. And so our job is to help them kind of get up to speed and create reasonable testing programs and mapping out kind of their internal guidance on what they do in the case of a product recall based on chemical compliance, and how do they navigate through questionnaires from their retail customer base as it relates to Prop 65 and ways in which they're doing compliance. And so that's what we think the power of FDRA is, 75 years of companies kind of continue to bounce ideas off each other and come out with a collective solution that may be below kind of where some companies are, but and maybe more well advanced than where other companies are, but it's still providing a good resource for our members to really navigate this issue. And so, even from a federal perspective, there really isn't. At one point, we had hoped that there'd be some kind of federal response to all this, but that doesn't seem to be in the works right now with all that's going on. So I think the patchwork approach and the Prop 65 and all these different things is going to be the future for the near term, and we need to continue to figure out the best tools we have at our disposal to do that, which includes an updated RSL and includes the running list of Prop 65 notices that are put on our website. It includes our quarterly test failure report. If there are other things that we can do, we implore this group to kind of help us think through those things, because that's all those things I just listed are things that someone within the working group suggested we do, and they've been helpful for folks to navigate this issue.
All right. Well, if there's nothing else, appreciate everybody taking time out of your afternoon to talk about product safety. If you do have any questions offline, you can email me at tcrockett@fdra.org or email matt@mpriest.fdra.org. Feel free to call us or email us anytime.
What's the website again where we've housed all that? We've had some people join the call midstream, so what's the website again?
So if the website, we'll send this out shortly, but it's fdra.org/productsafetywg/. And it's under our, if you go to the Intel Center and click on working groups, you'll see a list of all our working groups, and it's on there too, so that's another way to find it.
And if you need access to the Intel Center, just click on the Intel Center button and then go through the process of filling out the form, and we'll approve you quickly on our end so that you can get access to this information.
All right. Well, thanks again, everybody. Have a great rest of the week, and we'll talk to you soon or on the next call. Thanks.
Thank you, guys.
Bye, guys.